Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Wednesday, April 24th. Now, it's been a busy few days for Kent Police, so we've got plenty of crime news for you, and concerns have also been raised for the future of Kent's own music town. But first, taking a look at our most read story on the website today, an EastEnders star is among a campaign group calling for bosses in Herne Bay to reopen a playing field. John Altman, who played Nasty Nick Cotton in the soap, says he treasures the green space on Beacon Road and that it should be preserved. He comes as council bosses have blocked access to the site. They say it's privately owned by the authority and there's no record of it being designated as a public open space. Lucy's been looking at this story for the Kent Online podcast. Lucy, what's been happening?
Well, campaigners have been trying to have the playing field on Beacon Avenue reopened to the public since the local authority put gates up in May last year. Council bosses say the area is unsafe and in a state of disrepair, and that's why they've had to block access. A spokesperson also said that just because it's a council asset, that doesn't give the public the right to use it.
And so where does Nasty Nick fit in?
The 72-year-old actor, who is now the frontman of the band Heavy Metal Kids, is among a group of campaigners who say the site should be reopened. John Altman says he treasures the green space and he has fond memories of playing there when he was a child. He was also among a group of around 150 people who used the land on Easter Monday for an egg hunt. Apparently they gained access by using a neighbouring property. He says the fact that so many people turned out to use it for that one event should be evidence enough that it would be an asset to the community.
Now, residents say they've been holding events there for the last 100 years, but council say they've got no record of it ever being designated as a public space. Where do we go from here?
The local authority maintain the site is unsafe. They also say it's a difficult piece of land to do anything with, given its former use as a sports facility and having homes on all sides. They have said they will arrange a meeting with residents to explain the challenges they're facing and also to hear their thoughts on future options for the site.
Thanks, Lucy.
Kent Online News.
A suspected stalker has appeared in court following a string of alleged offences against a woman in Dartford. The victim reported being assaulted at her place of work, receiving multiple phone calls and seeing the suspect outside her home. 55-year-old Neil Letchford, who has no fixed address, will remain in custody before another court appearance next month. One person has been arrested following an assault in Folkestone. The victim was attacked at Bradstone Road. It's believed he was hit over the head with a blunt object. A 41-year-old man is accused of attempted grievous bodily harm. He's been released on conditional bail while inquiries continue. Catapults and more than 60 ball bearings have been seized from two boys in Paddock Wood. It's believed they were using the weapon to target wildlife and car windows. The boys' parents have been contacted and the investigation is ongoing. A teenager has been charged with burglary after four homes were targeted in Strood. The 16-year-old is thought to have attempted to break into two houses in Clinton Avenue before stealing a handbag from a property in Crispin Road and then later a car from Reed Court Road. The suspect, who's from Essex, remains in custody and will appear in court on Thursday. Three people have been arrested as part of an operation to crack down on drugs in Margate. Uniformed and plain-clothed officers worked in the streets to disrupt the sale and use of illegal substances. In total, 16 people were stopped and searched. Police seized cannabis and spice. A BMW driver has been arrested after crashing into an Ashford roundabout and continuing to drive with sparks flying from the wheel. After a brief police pursuit, the car was pulled over in Forge Lane in the early hours of Saturday. A 36-year-old man was charged with drink driving and will appear in court next month. A dispersal order is in place in Sheerness following reports of antisocial behaviour. Police say there's been an increase of call-outs to areas including Marine Parade, the Broadway and Trinity Road. The enforcement started at midday yesterday and lasts until midday tomorrow. And a person's been treated by paramedics after a fire at a flat in Dover. Emergency crews were called to Roosevelt Road yesterday evening. The cause of the blaze is under investigation.
Kent Online News.
We're being warned to be careful around cash points after a woman was scammed out of £800 in Ashford. The victim was at a Barclays ATM on the High Street when the machine seemingly malfunctioned. When she went into the branch to report the problem, two men managed to take the money from her account. Investigations are ongoing. A search is underway to to find two missing teenage girls who are thought to be in Folkestone. 17-year-old Cherise Broad and Rhianna Montgomery, who's 16, disappeared from Rochester on Monday evening. You can see their pictures by following Kent Online on socials. There are also concerns for a 46-year-old woman who's gone missing from Margate. Jacqueline Shahata was last seen heading towards the railway station yesterday morning. We've shared her picture at Kent Online as well. An infamous gangster from Dartford, who was the mastermind of the Hatton Garden heist, has died at the age of 84. Brian Reader, also known as the Governor, is thought to have died in September last year, but his family have been keeping it a secret. He was the leader of a group called the Diamond Weezers. In 2015, they stole gems and gold worth around £14 million from a vault in Hatton Garden. A shop in Chatham that was damaged when a car crashed through the front has reopened for business. The vehicle lost control and smashed into the One Stop on Magpie Hall Road last December. No one was injured and no police action was taken.
Kent Online News.
A panel which looks into the provision of send services in Kent could be scrapped. The subcommittee was set up after the county council was found to be failing vulnerable youngsters in an Ofsted report back in 2022, but its effectiveness has been questioned and it could be disbanded altogether. Private landowners could be forced to allow access to a collapsed road in Swanscombe. Highways bosses say they'll go to the courts if necessary to be allowed onto the site of a landslip on the A226 Galley Hill Road. It comes after more than a year of legal battles between the owners and KCC. Council say they can't complete their investigations until they're allowed on site. Residents are invited to attend a meeting in East Morling about plans to build 1,300 new homes. The project would be on farmland between Kilnbarn Road and Hermitage Lane in Ditton. East Morling and Larkfield Parish Council has yet to submit its views as it wants to hear from residents first. The meeting is 3 p.m. this Sunday in the Village Hall. Canterbury has topped the list of local authorities who make money from parking charges. The City Council made more than $10 million from fees in the last financial year. Medway came in second with $8 million. Tunbridge Wells made up the top three with more than $6 million. It comes as bosses at a clothes shop in Canterbury that was forced to close have blamed a rise in rents. High Street trader Bounce Vintage say rent has climbed to a colossal sum, similar to central London. The site is currently listed for rent for £30,000 per year. Now, there are calls for the Kent community to do more to crack down on food waste. Figures out today show nearly a quarter of people here in the southeast admit to throwing away food based solely on the best before date. I spoke to Charlie Lloyd, who's from the Recton Community Trust, which salvages products in Ashford.
Our food rescue project, we aim to save as much food that was destined for destruction as possible. We save about 0.75 tonnes of food a month. Now, this is mostly excess food from supermarkets that would have been destined for the bin. We rescue that and we distribute it at the centre. We also work with the Hythe Environment Group, who are essentially gleaners that go out onto farms in Hythe. And it is a surplus food that wouldn't have been farmed and would have just been left in the ground. The gleaners go out for us and they collect this food and give it to us, which enable us to distribute it in our food banks or anybody that comes into the centre. With that as well, we try and get the community involved to try and get people's ideas on sustainability. So what we've done with this excess food, in the summer holiday or the Easter holidays that have just been, we got kids to come in and draw pictures of spring things. And then with this food, we got a local artist to make a big mural. And again, then the kids could take the food home with them. So it's all trying to find innovative ways of engaging with the community to save food waste.
Why are they getting rid of the food?
So it can be that it's just coming up to its best before date, so they can't sell it from their own practices. Or if it's slightly damaged, but perfectly okay and perfectly safe to eat. Misshapen as well, you know, if you've got a wonky carrot, what does it matter? But we'll take it and we'll rescue it and we'll distribute it out to our community.
So as part of Stop Food Waste Day for this year, how can the community get involved? What can the average person do to sort of tackle food waste?
So where we've had quite a lot of success in tackling food waste, we've just the general people on the street within the community. We've got two community fridges here at the centre. So, for example, if you've done your weekly or monthly shop, but you're going away for the weekend or you're going on holiday, rather than put that food in the bin, whether it be fruit, vegetables or, you know, any ambient tins, bring it to us and we can distribute it to around within the community. And our community fridges are open for absolutely anybody to use. So they're always full of fruit and veg, which has either come from the gleaners, it's been rescued from the supermarkets, or like I say, if you You know, if you're going on holiday, just drop it off here, and it will, you know, it will get eaten.
In the cost of living crisis, obviously everybody's feeling their squeeze a little bit more. Have you seen an increase in demand for the surplus food?
Yeah, probably about a 400% increase on last year.
That's massive, a
It's
400%
massive. Yes,
increase.
it's a bonkers number. And when you look at it, but it's all of our food services are all tied in. So as well as the food rescue project, the food that we get rescued goes into the People's Pantry community shop. It goes into the People's Pantry emergency food parcels if people need them. And again, like I said, it goes into the fridge and anybody passing can take it. So, but yeah, there has been a demanding increase, yeah, about 400% on last year to this year.
Kent Online News.
A Ramsgate mum says she feels like she's living in a social experiment due to the violence, noise, and antisocial behaviour at her high-rise block of flats. Grace Palmer was moved into Stannar Court with her toddler Paddy by Thanet District Council in January after being on the housing register for 13 months. The 22-year-old says constant noise, fighting, and barking dogs are keeping her family up at night.
It does feel like a social experiment. It feels like they're all. Everything feels like. There's a reason lower class people are kept in places like this. And a lot of people believe that tower blocks shouldn't be used for living anymore, because they shouldn't. I don't think they're fit for purpose at all. They're horrible. The smell's out there. I can't go out there. He has to put the rubbish out because it literally, I am nearly puking at the smell. It's that bad.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you this because I can see what people in the, what people will say.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, a lot of people wait a long time on the
yeah.
housing register, and there will be people that will say, you know, you've got a flat.
Yeah, see, that's another thing. I placed 13th on this.
Yeah.
And they gave it to me on the basis that it not all of them through Thanet Council go to the highest bidder. And it's like there's 12 other people in front of me that were probably far more suitable than I was. So I am so grateful that I've got housing, but it's not suitable at all. Really,
no.
really isn't.
And sort of, what are your options if the council won't move you?
Nothing, I haven't got any options.
Not got any
because I'm
options.
On an introductory tenancy, which was all brought in because of this purpose, because people were being antisocial. So until I've got a secure tenancy, then I can swap with someone else. Other than that, I'm stuck here.
Yeah, you've sort of got nowhere else to go, no. You know, has it affected your mental health in any way?
Yeah, my mental health has plummeted since I've been here.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to change medication now. I'm on antipsychotics now, but I'm gonna have to change to something else.
What?
I've had complete rages. That's a common thing with borderline personality disorder, the rages at her. I thought I'm gonna be sectioned at some point because it's not it. And the council are literally ignoring me. I'm passing these emails on, these letters from my GP. Can you pass? Oh, yeah, we're passing on to your housing officer. Haven't heard anything.
A spokesperson from Thanet District Council said all reports of antisocial behaviour are taken seriously as they understand the effect it can have on tenants and neighbouring properties. They're not able to comment on individual cases, but can confirm they consider all requests from tenants to be transferred from their current home. A new report has found obesity, mental health issues and domestic violence are all on the rise in Kent. The Integrated Care Strategies carried out a study with data from councils and the NHS. It's highlighted serious social and health challenges with people living shorter, unhealthier lives. A secondary school near Maidstone has been granted a licence to serve alcohol and play music at their annual fireworks display. It comes despite claims from neighbours that sound from the event at Cornwallis Academy in Luce is insufferable. The school will also be allowed to sell more tickets to the show, which was previously capped at 500. Plans for a new McDonald's in Dover have sparked backlash from those who say the project will spoil views of the castle. The fast food giant wants to build a 24-hour restaurant on the vacant leisure centre site close to the port. Over 100 people have objected to the proposal. Highways bosses are urging council to think about the impacts it would have on traffic. Residents in part of Sittingbourne say overgrown trees are making their lives a misery. Hybrid black poplars have reached 50-foot high in Sonora Fields, blocking light from people's homes. Council bosses say they're assessing the situation to see what work is needed.
Kent Online News.
A study's found a drop in insect levels in Kent, which experts have described as incredibly concerning. The number of bugs found splattered on number plates has gone down by nearly 90% over the last two decades. Dr. Lawrence Ball is from the Kent Wildlife Trust.
There's obviously variability in how the data is collected each year, people driving in different places,
people driving different vehicles, different people taking part, different weather conditions, this sort of thing. But we are collecting sort of 5,000 or 6,000 journeys each year, covering over a sort of 120,000 miles. So we're thinking the data set now is big enough to sort of cancel out a lot of this noise. So that decline does reflect to an extent change in insect abundance over time. And it could be due to the weird weather we've been having over the last few years. So in 2022, we had that really hot summer. And then in spring last year, it was very warm and then very wet again in May. And this can affect insect life cycles. So you've got those sort of stochastic factors each year, but then longer term, there's a background rate of insect decline that's been shown not just by our study, but by other studies as well. And that's caused by factors such as habitat change, pesticides, pollution in waterways where a lot of insect life cycles start, and climate change, of course, as well, does affect insects and their distributions.
Why are insects so important?
So insects and all invertebrates underpin food chains. They underpin the functioning of ecosystems. So they're decomposers, they're pollinators, they're food for a wide range of other birds and amphibians, reptiles and other insects, which sort of are then fed on by other wildlife up the food chain. Without insects, a lot of our crops wouldn't be pollinated. A lot of sort of dead matter, dead animals, that sort of thing wouldn't be decomposed. So they're sort of fundamental to the whole ecosystem. And if they were to all disappear, it wouldn't be a pretty sight, really. I think we'd really struggle.
What can people do to help boost insect numbers? Is there anything people can maybe do in their own garden?
Yes, of course. There's so much we can do individually. There's lots of little things you can do in your gardens, bugs hotels, ponds. Water sources are just brilliant in your garden for all wildlife, especially if we keep having these hot summers. Compost heaps, wormeries, all these things are great. In terms of sort of individual things, we can buy plants from garden centres that are sort of approved to be pesticide free. We can avoid using things like slug and snail pellets and insecticides on our gardens, and try and seek out biological alternatives. So yeah, there's a lot we can do. We can also sort of lobby, obviously, to local politicians and lobby as much as we can about the avoidance of pesticide use when it's not needed, about improving conservation and funding for conservation as well.
Now, the owner of a music bar in Folkestone says he fears for the town's future as a hub of live music. 5 years ago, Folkestone was named as the world's first music town, a title that means the district has formally recognised music as an asset of value capable of boosting economic growth, tourism and health and well-being. But following the recent closure of two venues renowned for hosting live bands, long-time owner of the Chambers says we're in a critical moment for the future of the town's live music scene. Christopher has run the coffee shop Come Bar and Restaurant, which has music at the heart of everything they do for the last 25 years. Christopher has run the coffee shop Come Bar and Restaurant, which has music at the heart of everything they do for the last 25 years. But he says the pandemic has changed people's habits and the cost of living crisis has put a squeeze on disposable income. Villagers are one step closer to winning their battle to save a windmill in Mepham. Killick Mill in South Street was one of eight that were at risk of being sold off by council as a way of raising money. It's now been made an asset of community value, and the community will have the time to raise the money to buy it if council continue with their plans to sell it. The work of guide dogs in Kent is being celebrated as part of an international day to raise awareness. Since the charity started in 1931, the lives of 36,000 people with sight loss have been changed. Stacey Donnelly is a guide dog trainer in Maidstone.
Always wanted to work with dogs, so I was at college doing animal management. Always wanted to work with dogs, never really quite sure in what way. Job offer came up for guide dogs. I live in Medway, so the job was in Redbridge, and so I say, oh, we could go for it to see straight out of college, give it a whirl, and then got the job and went from there, and just said, always really enjoyed it. My dad also has partial blindness, so it's always quite interesting kind of learning about his sight loss and kind of what we do. It all kind of links together in the end. I always like to have a dog that can be, it's going to be a really good pet. So if it can be at home and it's settled in the home for the client or whoever has it, the recall of the dog's really nice, and general sort of soundness and overall temperament. You want that dog that's quite easygoing, quite happy to go out and work and enjoys what they're doing. We want the dogs to put the harness on and enjoy going out, but can also go home and just relax at the same time and not have to kind of be on the go all the time. So it's just finding that fine balance with them.
You enjoy the job then?
Yeah, I absolutely love it. As I said, it's nice. I love being outside anyway, a lot, and absolutely love the dogs. I love the challenge that each one brings. Every day is different because each dog is different. They all give you a different problem to solve or different experience, and I just love having all that kind of difference happening all the time.
What's the best bit about it?
It's always the end result. When you see the dog that you've come in with, and you know they're full of life, full of beans, and then you see the dog that goes out when they've matured and they're doing their job and they're guiding someone, and they generally have changed someone's life, you know, and knowing that you've kind of been a bit of a part of that, as corny as it sounds, it's so nice to see people going, oh, this is my guide dog, and we go here now, and we can do this now, where before potentially those things aren't an option. And just seeing the dogs learn and progress, for me, that's always a winner.
It costs around £10,000 to train a guide dog, with cash coming from donations.
Kent Online Sports.
Football now, and a Kent MP has spoken in the House of Commons about the importance of FA Cup replays.
I represent Gillingham, which has an amazing football club, the Gills, you know, who were in administration in 1995 and were bought for £1 by the then chairman Paul Scally, and now they're doing exceptionally well going up the league. But they're a small club, and they rely on FA replays. And if we're really passionate about supporting smaller clubs and ensuring the FA do the right thing in supporting smaller clubs, we need the government to work with the FA to make sure we get this right. We're seriously intending in supporting smaller football clubs in the community.
Raymond Chisty is among those calling for a rethink of plans by the FA to scrap all replays in the competition. A new regulator could be given the power to let clubs vote and potentially change the decision. Staying with football, and the Maidstone United boss is urging fans to bring the noise for their playoff match tonight. They're hosting Averley at the Gallagher Stadium after finishing fourth in the table. The winners will face Worthing next Sunday. Kickoff is at 7:45. And briefly to cricket, Kent bosses have given the green light for upgrades to one of the world's oldest cricket clubs. Leeds and Broomfield Cricket Club was founded in 1762, and now Maidstone Council have given permission for a replacement one-storey building. The existing club pavilion was built in 1999. It'll be demolished after the new one is built. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.